Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, our weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David Latulippe. This week I'll be talking with artistic director Celia Fuchil about Smuin Ballet's new dance season, which starts with performances at Walnut Creek's Lesher Center for the Arts on September 23rd before traveling to the San Francisco Palace of Fine Arts here in town. Also, a conversation with director Max Minton and writer Bruce Graham about the West Coast premiere of White Guy on the Bus. I'll also visit with Paige Rogers, artistic director for Cutting Ball Theater, to talk about Avant-Garde-Rama, a sampler of short experimental works, which kicks off their season. Plus, conductor Donata Cabrera brings us up to speed about the new season of the California Symphony, which opens this Sunday in Walnut Creek. Stay with us. Well, the West Coast premiere of White Guy on the Bus, a provocative show that depicts current race relations in America in a way that no other play has dared to do, is being produced by the local theater company Illuminus and will run from September 15th through the 24th at the Flight Deck in Oakland. Here to talk about the play in studio is director Max Minton, who has directed more than 50 plays and musicals and is an acclaimed actor in his own right, who will be next seen in the Altarena Playhouse production of The Elephant Man. His many years as a social justice activist has led him to bring White Guy on the Bus to Illuminus. Well, welcome to you, Max.
Thank you
for coming in. We're also joined by phone by the author of the play, Bruce Graham, who's written a number of award-winning plays, including Coyote on a Fence, Something Intangible, which was the winner of 7 Barrymore Awards, including Best New Play, Any Given Monday, a Barrymore winner for Best New Play as well. He also has a one-man show, The Philly Fan, which plays semi-continuously throughout the Philadelphia area. And he also teaches film and theater courses at Drexel University, and he joins me by phone from Philadelphia. Hi, Bruce. Welcome. Oops, you can't hear me, can you?
Hey, Bruce.
Bruce, can you hear me? I'm hoping to hear Bruce. Well, we definitely have Max Minton here. Hey, Max.
Hello. Hello, I am here.
We'll try to resolve our issue with Bruce as we continue things on. So tell us about the basics of White Man on the Bus, White Guy on the Bus.
Well, I was really intrigued by the title itself. I thought there was something kind of transgressive about it. And When I tracked down the script, I was really gratified to see that transgressive streak runs deep with Bruce Graham. It's a story that is, I think, above all probably an indictment of white privilege, but I would say it's about race, heartbreak, and revenge, not necessarily in that order. We're trying to build theater in Oakland, and in Oakland, you know, you really have to look at shows that are tough and bold and relevant, and that's what Illuminus Theater Company is really targeting. And this is an ideal choice.
Well, it kind of addresses a kind of false political correctness, doesn't it? And a deep-seated racism that goes along with that. Because I haven't seen it yet, but when I'm reading about it, it almost addresses the stereotypical feeling of political correctness, like, how could I be prejudiced? I know a black man. A black man's my friend, kind of thing.
Yeah, the superficial, I am free of racism.
Or I have Mitt Romney's binder full of women.
yes, and a small, very small binder of all my black friends. Yes, yeah. The casual way of just kind of evading issues of race that we use in our common discourse daily is just really blown up in this show.
It's amazing that we're almost post-Obama now and still so much to do, especially now with the blatant racism of Trump. And it's almost like one step forward, two steps back. Tell us about your work in social activism.
Well, I'm gay, and I've been involved in gay liberation issues for several hundred years, it feels like. And as a teacher, I taught for over 40 years, and what I found is that when you're teaching, if you are not addressing social issues, if you are not seriously active in issues of race and equity and equality, you're not serving your population. And I also found schools resistant to the whole idea. So a lot of my work went toward advancing both racial and gay issues in public schools, where it tends to be a forbidden topic, and teachers back away from it, feeling like, no, I don't dare go there. I don't dare go there. But if you don't go there, what are you really doing?
Or who's going to go there?
That's right.
Your head in the sand, or you can try to make things change. I'm going to try one more time to hail Bruce Graham on the other side of the pond there. Bruce, are you with us? Well, I hear noises on the phone, but I don't hear Bruce himself. So I think my producers are going to attempt one more time to get him by phone. In the meantime, we can still talk about White Guy on the Bus and what it's really doing. It runs tonight through the 24th. Information at brownpapertickets.com.
Right. Previews tonight and tomorrow night, and then opening on Saturday. I can tell you something that Bruce would tell you, which is that these issues don't get in the way of story. The issues drive the story, because these issues are the human issues that drive the people and the characters. And the characters are incredibly rich, powerful characters in this show. I think Bruce's main goal was to write just a really good story. And to get honest about a story in this time and in this place, you can't avoid the issues. You can't avoid the issues. People have said, I don't think people really talk about race that much. Well, that's an illusion. We do. We don't talk about it well or comfortably or deeply a lot of the time. But this play captures the times when people do get into the intensities of it. But it's basically an excellent story of a middle-aged man and going through middle-aged crisis. And he's a rich white guy, and he's got his hands on these levers of power that, you know, you can use one way or you can use another. And that power extends all the way to life and death. And there are two parallel stories. One is this little suburban family with the white guy and his family, and the other is that this white guy shows up week after week on this bus, and we don't know why he's there. At first, we don't know where he's going. And he becomes friends with a young black woman named Shatik. And what evolves out of that friendship not only involves the white privilege and the inequities, it comes to a rather astonishing point where those issues are all powerful in their interactions and in what happens between them. So it starts out as a little kind of domestic drama, and then it shifts gradually into almost like a film noir kind of thing, where you have an innocent character who gets involved with this tale of vengeance and violence. But it has very much to do with the inequity between the characters.
And it's perfect having the West Coast premiere out here, too.
It is. This is, when Illuminus was looking for plays, somebody on the board said, well, you know, I don't know if there's such a thing as an Oakland play. I mean, we're so diverse. What is an Oakland play? And I thought, I know exactly what an Oakland play is. I have one in my back pocket. I've been trying to get produced, you know, and that's why Guy on the Bus. It's a perfect show. And we went through reading 40 scripts, and this was the one that kept rising to the top. White Guy on the Bus.
Mm. So tell me about your actors.
It's a cast of five, and the lead came in 2 weeks ago, and this is Steve Rexrode. Came in 2 weeks ago, has put together this incredible performance, the character that is on stage every minute of the show. And he plays the white guy, Ray, and plays opposite Michelle Taylor, a young actress that I first worked with when she was in high school, and that I've kept my eye on, you know, for all these years. Just a tremendous actress, and she plays Shatik. Maureen Williams, a very, very popular actress in the East Bay, plays Ray's acerbic wife. And the younger couple, Brielle Pomerantz, who's just this wonderful triple threat that I've worked with before, and a young actor that I think is really going to go someplace, 23 years old, but I think is spectacular talent. It's Mario Rapa. Like I said, when we sent out scripts, every actor that we sent a script to wanted to do it, and so we got some really incredible talent, and I think they're dedicated not just to the performance and to the script, but to the issues, and that's really vital in something like this, I think.
Well, let's try one more time to see if we can raise Bruce Graham. Bruce, are you with us? Bruce, are you listening? Maybe he's listening and he's contributing in spirit.
He's probably so dazzled with how we're presenting his play.
White Guy
he's
on the Bus.
Stunned.
Is at the Flight Deck. This is a new venue for me. I've never seen the Flight Deck. Tell me about the venue.
Flight Deck's been there for a couple of years now, and it has, I think, five resident companies, and it's sort of anchors this new artistic community that is really burgeoning on Broadway in Oakland. And I saw several of their plays and decided, you know, these are the people that would not be afraid to do White Guy on the Bus. I saw it and I thought, this is the right place. This is the right town. This is the right time. And Illuminous is the particular theater company. The artistic director is Michael French. And I worked with him some on a couple of stage readings and brought the play to him. I think it's too challenging for a lot of theater companies, but it's not for Illuminous. This is the kind of play Illuminous goes for.
Well, you know, as you know, Max, we're in the middle of our fall membership campaign.
Yes.
Earlier today on your call, our host Rose Aguilar had as a guest Ian Haney Lopez, who wrote this book called Dog Whistle Politics, which is an appropriate gift for today.
Yes, I've read about it.
If you call 800-525-9917 for a gift of $120, ties in nicely to White Guy on the Bus, that's for sure. This book is about how coded racial appeals have reinvented racism and wrecked the middle class. It all ties together, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've downloaded it from Amazon. I haven't read it yet because I've been so busy
with
the show. But everything I've read about it just sounds really, really... it's one of those things you read about that book and you think, yes, 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 as you're reading about it. It sounds like there's going to be a lot of truth uncovered in that.
Once again, the white Guy on the Bus is at the Flight Deck. The Flight Deck is at 1540 Broadway, brownpapertickets.com for more information. There's some links to some wonderful articles. In fact, there's an article in The Chronicle by Lily Joviak's fascinating article about this and other plays of the same topic. Brown Paper Tickets for White Guy on the Bus. Bruce Minton, director. Max Minton, director, and Bruce Graham in spirit by phone. we love you, Bruce. We'll have you on again soon. Thanks for coming in, Max.
Thank you very much.
During some strains of Mozart, 800-525-9917. I'm encouraging you to call. I'm David LaTulipe. You're listening to Open Air. Still to come this hour, I'll be talking with Artistic director for Cutting Ball Theater, Paige Rogers, about Avant-Garde-Rama, a sampler of short experimental works which kicks off their season. Donata Cabrera is standing by to talk about the California Symphony. I also talk with Celia Fuschiel about Smuin Ballet's new dance season. It's all to come here on Open Air, where your support makes the programming possible. 800-525-9917. You can make that donation at kalw.org. Get a special shout out for the arts programming here on KLW, one of the few public radio stations that really has a strong commitment to the arts. 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917 during this, our no interruption pledge drive. Now, that's a slight interruption, but it's not an extended pledge break asking for your support. And if you support that type of fundraising, a minimal approach, minimal interruption, 800-525-9917. Some lovely Mozart, the G major concerto. You're hearing Emmanuel Pahud perform with the Berlin Philharmonic in this recording. It happens to tie in with this weekend's performances by Annie Wu, along with the California Symphony and music director Donata Cabrera, who is both the music director of the California Symphony and the Las Vegas Philharmonic, former resident conductor of the San Francisco Symphony from 2009 until this year. Welcome back, Maestro.
Great to be here, David, really.
Well, for a couple of seasons now, you've been music director of the Las Vegas Philharmonic, not a town one associates with classical music. So how did Saturday's opening go?
Well, and yet it's a town closely associated with entertainment.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, it went incredibly well. And what is so wonderful about it is that the audience, they're like sponges that have been dried for months, just waiting for the next concert by the Las Vegas Philharmonic, because we're really the only game in town, and we play in such a beautiful performing arts center. It's the Smith Center for the Performing Arts. So it was a great, great event. But happy to be back here in the Bay Area to open the 30th anniversary season of the California Symphony. 30 years.
Who'd have thunk it?
That's fantastic. Who'd have
thunk it? Talk about the venue that the California Symphony plays in.
We play at the Lesher Center for the Performing Arts in Walnut Creek. It's a wonderful auditorium. And what is great about it, and of course I don't experience this because I'm on stage, but when you're in the audience, apparently you really feel connected in a very close way with the orchestra, and it's a very intimate environment for a symphony orchestra, which is not typical.
You're opening with a little bit of the Mozart that we just heard, Emmanuel Pahud, with Annie Wu, who is you're going to be your flute soloist this weekend. Interesting circles of coincidence there, as Annie was a student of Isabelle Chapuis, who mm-hmm. is the principal flutist of the San Jose Symphony. San Jose Opera, which is also staging Kevin Putz's opera Silent Night. Kevin Putz is also a special relationship with the California Symphony, as does Mason Bates. So it's now here's the other connection. Mason Bates' opera on Steve Jobs will be premiered next year at Santa Fe Opera, which also has a Philip Campbell as librettist, who was the librettist for Silent Night.
We're all connected. It's a small family. And on top of that, Annie is a Bay Area native, and she grew up in Pleasanton and was the principal flute of the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra for many years while I was its music director.
Wow.
So it's so wonderful to have her come back in a homecoming sort of way and to showcase this brilliant young artist. But we begin the concert, as you mentioned, with this great piece that Kevin Putz composed while he was the Young American Composer in Residence for the California Symphony. It's called Network, and it is a piece that has been performed by many, many orchestras since it was commissioned almost 20 years ago now. I just love this piece, and I love the fact that we're able to showcase a piece by a former Young American Composer in Residence on every concert this year as a part of the 30th year celebration. And I will play it.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the music from Network of Mr. Putz, and then we'll talk more with Donata Cabrera. Little sampling of the music of Kevin Putz, one of the composers in residence with the California Symphony, a fine lineage that includes Mason Bates, whose opera will be performed on about the life of Steve Jobs next season at Santa Fe Opera. The Kevin Putz work, Network, will be this coming Sunday evening with the California Symphony, talking with conductor Donata Cabrera. One more shout out to your soloist on that first half, Annie Wu. She is now the recently joined the New World Symphony, and she appeared at Carnegie Hall at the age of 12. At 15, was a first prize winner of the National Flute Association competition. She's a really swell girl.
She's fantastic. I can't wait. Can't wait to see her make the whole audience light up with her, I'm sure, stellar performance of the Mozart Flute Concerto.
Mm. What's the second half bringing for this Sunday's concert?
The second half is one of the great symphonies written in the first half of the 20th century by the Russian composer Sergei Rachmaninoff. We all know his his music that he, of course, wrote for the piano, his solo piano pieces, and, of course, his second piano concerto and third piano concerto are often performed. But we, with his second symphony, we really get a sense of Rachmaninoff, the composer. And, of course, we all know that he was gifted with melody, but he really knew how to write for the orchestra in that great Russian tradition, Rimsky-Korsakov, Stravinsky, the list goes on, Mussorgsky, of course. It's just the sense
Tchaikovsky, I hate to forget
him. But his sense of color and use of instruments, it just perfect. And orchestras love to play this piece. It's a great piece to play. And I know our audience will just really, really enjoy it.
Let's get a little sample of that to refresh people's memory of the rock. second movement of Rock 2. Amazing music, isn't it?
It is. And
you must make these California Symphonians work at it.
Well, I have to say I'm blessed with two fantastic orchestras, and the California Symphony is just full of these, the Bay Area's finest. And so it's a joy, truly a joy to work with them.
So what number season does this make for you for conductor of the California?
This is my fourth season, I believe,
and
now. Over how time flies.
And again, the anniversary 30th season of the California Symphony.
And, you know, there's just so many things to celebrate there. I can't think of another orchestra of this size that promotes music by living composers with as much intensity and engagement as the California Symphony. And to have these rather august former composer in residence, Kevin Putz, as we mentioned, and Mason Bates and Christopher Theofanides, to name just a few, it's such a gift to the community. And if you haven't seen a concert by the California Symphony in Walnut Creek, please come out and see it. It's really, really an amazing thing.
CaliforniaSymphony.org is the place to go to that. Learn more about the season as well as tickets for this coming Sunday's concert. The part of the mission of the California Symphony is to make concerts fun again, according to your website, which includes bringing drinks to your seats, clapping when you feel like clapping, not necessarily sitting on your hands if something inspires you, keeping your cell phone on.
Listen, we live in a drastically different society than we did 100 years ago. Heck, 10 years ago. And I think we must find a way to evolve in terms of creating a concert experience. We don't want to take away from the music, because the music is timeless and it should be presented in that way and with respect. But what happens around those pieces of music, I think a lot of orchestras need to do a lot of retooling. And we're doing that. And we're streaming the first portion of the concert on our Facebook page. We're streaming the pre-concert lecture I hate to even call it a lecture, because it's really more of a conversation between the soloist that I will have, or the composer that's there. So that will be streamed on the Facebook page as well. So we're just really trying to engage with our community in a current way.
And including in prior to the concert, you'll have some food trucks around the Lesher Center and a petting zoo, so to speak.
Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me, David. I need to focus.
Are you the type that has to eat before or after your performance?
Okay, so I'm trying to change my diet at the moment, and eating after a concert usually means late at night, and that's just not good. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to eat a little bit before the concert.
Okay. Well, this is an afternoon concert.
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's great. I can have a nice dinner afterwards.
There's a lot more to the 30th season. Let's talk about what else you're offering us in terms of the 30th season of the California Symphony.
Well, at the last concert in May, we're performing a Bruckner Symphony, and I know a lot of orchestras around the Bay Area sort of shy away. Some of the smaller orchestras shy away from Bruckner and Mahler, because the big orchestra in town does that music quite well, obviously, and a lot. But we are jumping right into the fray and doing Bruckner's Symphony No. 6. I think it'll be a wonderful experience for of course, our musicians and for the audience to experience that music in the Lesher Center. And we do have a little example of the Sixth Symphony. We can play the Scherzo movement for our audience.
Great. This will be part of the what concert is this?
This is the final concert of our season.
All right. We'll play that in just a moment. But I want to also touch on again the fact that the applications are now open for the next composer in residence.
Yes,
for the California
Symphony.
Until
through October, we're accepting applications for the next young American composer in residence. It's currently Dan Visconti. This is his final year. And on the final concert with the Bruckner Symphony No. 6, we'll be premiering Dan Visconti's cello concerto called The Tiger Eye, which I think is sort of a subtitle of a James Bond film, but it's also it's also the cello concerto by Dan Visconti.
Maybe it's Eye of the Tiger Mom.
That's a nice little combination of things. So we're doing that as well, and not to forget our concert in March, which is the French Connection, which is Pierre Jalbert, which is another young American composer in residence that we had quite a few years ago. Fantastic composer. So we have a lot in store for our audiences this season.
CaliforniaSymphony.org. I can also learn about the composer in residence search at full details about what that process is like, and maybe you can be the next composer in residence with the California Symphony. The concert this coming Sunday is at 2 o'clock, is that correct?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock, okay.
You can get there at 2.
Yep.
The food trucks.
Yeah, there you go. Let's listen to some Bruckner that you'll hear later in the symphony season, the 30th anniversary season of the California Symphony. Donato, such a pleasure to, anytime, please come back.
My pleasure, David.
Here's the scherzo from Anton Bruckner's Symphony No. 6. As we continue with a bit of Bruckner as a background, we're going to ask for your support by calling 800-525-9917. Donato wanted to hang out a little bit longer to mention his support for this station. Now he's here with our station manager, Matt Martin.
Well, over some light music from Bruckner. No, I've my first experience coming to the Bay Area as a aspiring conductor was one of my first experiences was coming to this very room and being interviewed for a concert, upcoming concert by the Youth Orchestra. And I remember just feeling that this is such a part of the community in a way that the other stations just, they don't have that. And I just have been an ardent supporter of KALW ever since then. And I'm a proud supporter.
This station's been community-based since its beginning, right? Beginning in a public school, still connected to the school district, and I think has just worked really to try to continue to not only keep the doors open to the community, but to build new connections. And certainly, like what a program like Open Air, I think I know you've also been a guest on Revolutions Per Minute with
That's
Sarah
right.
Cahill, bringing on people doing the work of making music and art and performing and saying, we want to make this live right here. And I think that is part of what KALW is, not just, we're actually part of the creative fabric of the Bay Area and want to have a relationship with creative people here. And so we're very grateful because, I think of a thing, this morning we were talking on the air about things we were grateful for, and I think to work in a place, and by that I mean KALW and the Bay Area, where you can interact with just top flight folks and hear what they think about their work and how they approach it, and be on a real human level with one another. So I really appreciate you being here and your words of support for the station.
Thank you.
800-525-9917. You can make that donation at kalw.org. Thank you, gentlemen. Donato, we'll have you back again for the next concert, perhaps.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Matt. Well, the Smuin Ballet is rebranding itself as the Smuin Contemporary American Ballet, and I talked with the artistic director of that fine organization, Celia Fuschiel, recently at the Smuens headquarters.
Celia, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
And the 23rd season of Smuen, I understand there's also a rebranding of the company going on.
Exactly. We're now identifying ourselves as Smuen Contemporary American Ballet, and we're delighted with our 23rd season. It's a great lineup.
Welcoming five new dancers to the company as well this season.
Yes, five new dancers, and they've assimilated beautifully into the company. Several of them, it's been their desire and ambition to join Smuen for many years, so we're really happy to have people that enthusiastic on board now.
Three works on this opening program, one of which is choreographed by the founder of Smuen Ballet, Michael Smuen, as a 9/11 tribute. I understand it had a dual purpose when it's been done with Smuen.
Yes, we've performed it several times, and it was terribly meaningful for us when we performed it the season after Michael passed away. And it was really our tribute to him. The piece is choreographed for five couples, and the lead couple, the woman, has lost her partner, and he appears in the piece to dance with her, and at the end he disappears again. As quickly as he appeared, he disappears at the very end, and she realizes that she is alone but has to continue with hope. There's a beautiful moment in the music where it ends in a major chord, and Michael had choreographed this piece and had the woman come to the front of the stage and drop her head at the end. And the more I watched that, I said to Michael, the major chord to me signifies hope. And he gave that some thought, and he ended up changing it. And at the very end, while the other couples of the community kneel, she then raises her head because there is hope. And I told the dancers when I started staging it this season that we perform this with our hope that we will one day see peace in our world. Clearly, it is the 15th anniversary of 9/11, but thinking about the hope that we hope to see, the peace that we hope to see around the world, we just can't give up that hope.
And the beautiful music of Dvorak's Stabat Mater.
It's an incredible piece of music. One of the most beautiful. I think there may have been 150 different Stabat Maters written by so many composers, but Michael was drawn to Dvorak's, and it's a spectacular work.
Being Latin for sorrowful mother, and that final scene will be extremely moving then.
Yes, exactly. It is the Latin for sorrowing mother, and describing the Virgin Mary's sorrow as she sees her son on the cross. Michael removed any religious connotation from the piece, but this man that is in the lead woman's life could be, it's representative of any relationship. We think of people that lost their spouses or their children or their fiancés or siblings, whatever the case is, it's clearly that there's a deep love between these two people, and that he's now removed from her life, and the community is there to support her, and he demonstrates that in the choreography beautifully.
You mentioned five couples in this work. The next work uses music of Vivaldi for four couples in a different sort of interplay.
Yes, quite different. We are thrilled to be performing Stanton Welch's work. He's the artistic director of the Houston Ballet, grew up in Australia with parents that were both ballet dancers, so he comes from a dancing family, and a supremely musical choreographer, which sounds ridiculous. It seems like, well, a choreographer must be musical. But when you watch his choreography, you see the music represented by the dancers. He so captures every phrase, every moment of the score. He must have studied the score so deeply, and has the dancers reflecting that. What I love about Stanton's work is that while it's strictly classical, it's definitely using the classical foundation, he also has these little quirks and whimsical movements that capture these repetitive moments in the score. And it's, as you mentioned, for four couples, and they switch partners through the piece, and they end up with different partners. And it's not really a story of any sort. But a real virtuoso piece. I'm excited for the dancers to have this challenge, and they're certainly rising to the occasion.
And what the work is called Indigo, and which music of Vivaldi was chosen?
interestingly enough, he chose to use two complete cello concerti, the one in B minor and then in G minor. So it's just fabulous to have these two full concerti and the dancers just at times moving with lightning speed and with such precision. It's really fantastic to see.
Well, this is first presentation of Smuin is a real treat, not only for ballet fans, but for music fans, because another third work that's being choreographed is Mozart's incredible Sinfonia Concertante.
Exactly. And we were delighted that Garrett Ammon, who joins us from Denver, Colorado, where he runs a company there, Wonderbound, this is the second work that we're doing, but the first that he's created on our dancers. And he spent about 2.5 weeks in the studio with us creating this piece. And he uses all three movements. It's the full concertante, the full piece of music. And interestingly enough, it's been some time since we had an all-classical program. And it's wonderful to see what three distinct choreographers do with what we describe as, we broadly classify as classical music, clearly centuries apart. But wonderful to see Garrett's more contemporary take on the movement that he set to this classical score.
The performances are next Friday and Saturday at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek, the following Thursday through Sunday, October 2nd, at the Palace of Fine Arts here in San Francisco. You're also offering a pre-performance talk on Thursday the 29th here in San Francisco.
Exactly. We're able to do that at the Palace, and we set it up right in the theater so people can come early and learn a little bit about the process of putting this program together and learn a little bit about the three pieces. People have found those very informational, and it's something we enjoy doing.
And then these performances will be repeated in March in Mountain View and in Carmel. And, of course, everyone's looking forward to this year's incarnation of the Smuin Christmas Ballet. Is it going to be called the Christmas Ballet this year? Or?
It will be the Christmas Ballet. I think that music kept me up all night last night while I was thinking of all of the order. I usually have to put that together in September or October, so I'm always early thinking about Christmas.
Well, we look forward to that, of course. And tickets are available at the ballet's website.
Exactly, smuinballet.org.
Celia Fuchsiel, thanks so much for taking some time today on Open Air, and have a wonderful 23rd season.
Thank you, David. Always a pleasure to see you.
The music of Vivaldi, the Cello Concerto in B minor, one of the featured works at the Smuin Ballet, Contemporary Ballet, American Ballet, smuinballet.org for more information. You'll hear not only the music of Vivaldi, but Mozart and the Stabat Mater of Antonin Dvorak. Performances next Friday and Saturday at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek, and the following Thursday through Sunday, October 2nd, here in San Francisco at the Palace of Fine Arts. You're listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio, KALW. Still to come, a discussion with Paige Rogers about the Cutting Ball Theater's Avant-Garde-Arama. But before we do, this non-commercial announcement for non-commercial radio, 800-525-9917, encouraging you to call to support not only Open Air, but all of the programming you hear on KALW. It's our No Interruption Fall Membership Campaign. We only come to you twice a year. We don't take big breaks out of our programming. We were the first station to do so back in 2011, and now all kinds of stations across the country are imitating that because they realize that people know what to do. They know how to support public radio, and they know what has to be done by making that phone call to make things possible. 800-525-9917. Give a gift in support of KLW's 75th birthday. Thank you.
music of Antonio Vivaldi to be choreographed by Stanton Welch for his critically praised piece Indigo, part of the Smiwan Ballet's dance offering for this next Friday and Saturday at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek. I'm David LaTulipe. This is Open Air on Local Public Radio, KALW. A pleasure to welcome back co-founder and artistic director of the Cutting Ball Theater, Paige Rogers, an acclaimed actress in her own right. Very happy to have you back, Paige.
Thank you. It's nice to be sitting across from you, David.
And you mentioned your support for Local Public Radio, too, which was very kind of you.
Oh, my gosh. It's a funny story. When my husband, who co-founded the theater with me, Rob Melrose, we moved to the city in 98, and I immediately started to listen to KALW, and there was a drive, and I donated, I think it was $20 at that time. And I'll never forget the first time we were invited to come to have an interview here. And, you know, we'd been fans for years and listened to you for, you know, at least 5 years. And I said to, you know, Rob, this is like a dream that we get to be on KALW and be interviewed. So we've been supporters even before we started to come in and chat about theater, because that is what you talk about, theater and music and culture and those folks in the Bay Area, which strangely are the majority of folks in the Bay Area who are interested in those things, listen to you, and so
and
do I.
And in spite of all the new technology and ways to listen to other devices, radio still has that power to reach people.
That's absolutely true. I stream you while I'm cooking. Yeah.
At KALW.org, where you can also make a contribution. Well, Paige, let's get down to some business here about talking about this festival of seven short experimental plays featuring Bay Area directors. You had me with the description of the first piece, The Wasps.
Yep.
Do tell me about that piece.
Okay. So this is an interesting piece written by Guy Zimmerman of Padua Players in Los Angeles. And I'm directing this one. It's about Jenna and Barbara Bush after Armageddon on the eve of their execution. And the first time I ever read this play, it was 2009, and I just said, I'm directing this. That's all there is to it. I mean, this is my play. And Guy is so great. He's a wonderful, wonderful playwright and poet. And I just want to say it's a poetical piece in many ways. And in trying to make sense of it with my actors, we Skype with him sometimes, and it's really a poem. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. It's brutal, and it's just what we like at Cutting Ball. It's about a 30-minute piece. We have another piece that's about 30 minutes and some other shorter ones, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, 4 minutes. So what I like to call Avant-Garde-Rama is like a little tapas plate of theater. And if you have someone in your life who you would like to bring to Cutting Ball, but maybe you wouldn't try them on an hour and a half long show, this is your show. This is your show to just a little sampler of many, many different pieces by many different directors, completely different voices. Like, for example, Katarina Wong is a dancer in town, and she's a choreographer. She's doing a piece about the election with two of her dancer actors called Crooked and Dangerous. It also has a video in it. And, you know, we just there's something for everyone. And also, two Europeans are directors. We have the Italian Beatrice Basso is doing a piece. It's called Pezzetti, which means little pieces in Italian. And she, her actor, is one actor on stage with an enormous teddy bear. And it's once in a while there's some spoken word, and those spoken words are in English and in German and in Italian. And then we have another piece directed by Sonia San Sebastian, who's quite a famous filmmaker in Spain, but happens to be over in California for this year. And her piece is based on not a very well-known Lorca play, which I can't remember the name of right now. And she's created about a 10-minute piece that's in Spanish and has that Lorca quality.
It's called An Audience.
No, that one. Oh, no, wait. Sonia's
Inspired by Lorca.
It's called
Lorca's.
Lorca al Vacchio.
Ah, there you go.
Lorca al Vacchio. And you're right. David, you're totally right. The Lorca piece that it's based on
is an audience. Yes, and it's called Lorca al Vacchio.
Vacchio. But although it's Spanish. It might be Vacchio. Niels, what do you think?
My partner hopefully is not listening because
he
is.
Okay, we did not make that mistake. But Sonia's just a really interesting director and brings a lot of sound into her pieces. And we decided after talking about the translation
no, we're not going to translate it. She's working with two Spanish-speaking actors, and we will have super titles for the first time at Cutting Ball, which I've done many times when I go to various festivals in Europe. I've been to a festival in France, in Avignon, where the super titles are in French, and my French is pretty good, but you know, it's really confusing then if you're listening in Polish and trying to read in French. But yes, for the first time at Cutting Ball, we're trying super titles because next year we may bring a piece over from Poland to be in our season.
Well, you mentioned the fact that the Lorca, the Spanish tapas, are you at least serving a Spanish Rioja at intermission or nice wine?
Alas, no. we don't do that sort of food type of thing. Cutting Ball is little, as you know. Just 65 seats. It's a very intimate experience. You can see the actors sweat. You can hear them and see every expression on their face. It's a very intimate experience, and the lobby is not that big. But that's why people like Cutting Ball. It's a real visceral experience for the audience.
It's the 2016-17 season, Cutting Ball Theater Avant-Garde-Rama, a festival of seven short experimental plays featuring Bay Area directors, including my guest, Paige Rogers, who's directing The Wasps. I love that. You know, post-apocalyptic Jenna and Barbara Bush as they await execution. I can see it now.
It's fun, you guys. It's really fun. It's so fun to work on. The actresses are great. Just want to make a plug for our new banners around town, which represent our 16-17 season. And they're up on the light posts in San Francisco. All feature a female person with something in her mouth. One is Brittany Fraser, who has a cigar in her mouth. The other is Courtney Walsh, who has some pearls in her mouth. And then
I have seen
it. Have you seen it?
I have.
It's such a beautiful, I mean, they're really beautiful images. And another is a little girl who has a rubber lizard in her mouth. And the lizard represents Avant-Garde-Rama. And Brittany with the pearls represents Phedra. She's playing Phedra for us in the spring by Racine. And then Brittany Fraser is playing Hedda Gabler for us with the brilliant Yuri Ernov directing. He did our Ubu Roi 2 years ago, which was a smash hit because his direction is kind of out of control.
It was an amazing.
Do you remember seeing it?
Yeah.
I assistant directed that, and I'm going to say without shame that I don't like the play Ubu Roi. And when we picked that, I was bummed. You know, I was like, oh God, I hate that play. Literally, I think I saw it 50 times. I cried. I laughed so hard every time, like tears. I'm not even kidding. I mean, Yuri's brilliant, and so we're so happy to have him back. He's a professor at Towson University, born and raised and trained in Moscow, and who knows what he's going to do with Hedda.
And when will that be?
Hedda opens in mid-January, and Phedra opens in mid-April. Avant-Garde-Rama, a little tapas piece, is going to open October 5th and run only until the 23rd. We're just doing 3 weekends of the tapas piece. And also, I just want to say one other thing, David. So these women, two of the women, of course, have the leads. One is playing Phedra, one is playing Hedda. But the other one, the little girl with the lizard in her mouth, is my little girl. Yeah, Charlotte. And that picture
was plastered all over the city.
And she was a pretty good sport about it, I have to say. But she's 16, and that picture was taken when she was 4. And she was slightly mortified, but wouldn't go so far as to let me take a picture of her today underneath one of those banners. She was like, no, not having it. But so that's Rob Melrose. We're married, and that's our oldest child.
Very nice. Through the 23rd, the Avant-Garde-Rama vignettes, tapas at the Cutting Ball Theater on
277 Taylor Street, www.cuttingball.com.
Thanks, Paige. I do need to ask, has your contribution level to KLW increased beyond $20?
I think a hundredfold it's increased. I'm not even kidding. I absolutely support KLW. You can look me up, David, because I have increased my support, and Rob and I really feel strongly about public radio.
Well, our general manager is joining us now and thanking you for that.
Thank you, Paige.
You are so welcome.
This is so cool. Most people we just get to thank on the radio. We get to thank you in person. Really appreciate
it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's this space of KALW and of Open Air in particular is a place where all kinds of creative folks from the Bay Area come together, and we are grateful for your work in the community and for you being part of making this an interesting station to work with, to listen to, I'm hoping. So,
I'm hoping too, because I have to continue listening to KLW for the entire time that I'm around. I have to tell you, my kids tease me a little bit, though.
They should,
yeah.
That's the role.
They're like, please, can we listen to music? Like, no, David's going to be on in 5 minutes. I have to listen.
But I'm sure that you've had this experience. I've had this experience with my daughter. She'll be with friends in the backseat. They're yakking away, and then suddenly I hear them get quiet, and I realize, oh, there's something
they're
on the radio.
They're actually listening. It's true.
They've tuned into.
It's true.
And hey, that's all you can ask. When you're controlling the dial, if they find something interesting, you got to take that.
That's absolutely true, though. Yeah.
Number to call is 800-525-9917. Show your support not only for Open Air, but for all of the quirky stuff we do here at KLW. You're not going to hear it anywhere else but at 91.7 or online at klw.org, where you can make that contribution rather easily.
We've been having tremendous support from listeners today and in this campaign. Already over $100,000 raised. Thank you so much if you're someone who's already given. We really appreciate it and hope that you enjoy your programming with just these brief requests for support. And if you haven't, maybe you've never given to this station before, but you've been listening. There's no guilt about it. You know, we want this to be a voluntary act. We're not pressuring you to do anything. We want you to join something that you enjoy, that you value, and that you want to see thrive. If KALW is that, all we ask is you decide what you want to give. Make a call to 800-525-9917 or go to KALW.org.
Join Cutting Ball Theater's founding directors and artistic folks, Paige Rogers and Rob Melrose. Thank Rob for us, by the way, Paige.
Oh, I will. I totally will.
And thanks again for coming in.
Okay. Thank you, David.
800-525-9917. Please make that call now or go to KALW.org. 800-525-9917.
We will be going to the BBC News Hour that you hear at 2 o'clock every weekday here on KALW in just a moment. So, but before we get to the news of the world, or perhaps as we get to that news, take a little time to go to KALW.org and make a contribution. This is the 75th year that this station has been on the air, and the community has backed it all the way, so we thank you for that support. And if you want to get a great thank you gift, my personal favorite this time around is our 75th anniversary mug. It is a damn nice little mug. So I say in public radio world, if you're a KALW fan, if you just want to show your support for public radio in general, this mug's a nice way to do it. That's yours for a $91.70 pledge to KALW.
800-525-9917. Better yet, make it a $20 a month pledge. It's easy to do. It can come right out of your checking account, or if you prefer, rack up those frequent flyer miles on your favorite credit card. And every month, a contribution comes. You'll see it on your statement. You'll feel good about supporting local public radio. 800-525-9917. Or online at KALW.org.
That 800-525-9917. That sustaining membership is actually very valuable for the station because we only come to you twice a year. So, as you can imagine, we have rather large bursts of cash that come in just a couple of times a year. And so the folks who decide to give on a monthly basis, it does even that out a little bit, which helps with our financial planning. Always good. But however you want to support this station, we are grateful to you. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
Make it a sustaining pledge for year after year, and we won't even bother you with sending stuff in the mail to renew. 800-525-9917. Perhaps you're already a sustaining member of KLW and want to give us a little extra, a little push during this, our 75th year. 800-525-9917. We're going to go uninterrupted to the BBC News, all of the programming that you're hearing during this very brief 10 days of fundraising, coming to you uninterrupted because that's the way you like it. That's the way we like to give it to you as well. 800-525-9917 is the number to call. You can also make that pledge online at KALW.org. News from the BBC is coming up next. It was recorded an hour earlier for broadcast at this time on your local public radio station, KALW San Francisco.